Ladies and gentlemen, that is right. I hope you enjoyed that intro song. We are going to be happy today. And I am learning more and more that happiness really is a choice, and it's an effort we have to make to focus on the good, focus on the things we can make a difference in, and try not to worry too much about things that are out of our control. So this is episode 50. You guys, I can't believe it's already episode 50. I have worked really hard on this podcast, and I hope that you have been enjoying it. Some of you have reached out to me and let me know that you love this podcast, and I appreciate that. And a lot of you listening, I don't know who you are, but I am so grateful that you're here and that you're listening to my voice right now. What an honor and what a privilege to have you with me today. And this episode, I couldn't decide what to talk about for my 50th episode. I thought, oh gosh, I want this episode to be epic. But I have been inspired and emotionally pushed to give you guys an episode that is directed toward conservative people and to give you a how to talk to your LGBT friends and family lesson. Because as Lady MAGA USA, nothing is more important to me than responding to messages from parents who are terrified because they feel that they have lost their LGBT child. They feel that they have no influence. They feel scared. They feel angry. They feel bitter. And they message me and talk about their trans child or their child who is non-binary or, you know, changing their pronouns and running along with this LGBTQIA++ narrative. And they talk to me, and a lot of times I'll give them my phone number and say, you know what, give me a call. And just the other day I spoke with a mother, I'm going to call her Kelly, for an hour and a half. And I just want to begin with Kelly's story because I know that pretty much any conservative parent who has children over the age of, I don't know, actually, no, any child in today's world is vulnerable to this LGBTQIA+ narrative. But before I continue and before I forget, I have a dear friend who lives in Texas. She is a Latina business owner and she is a patriot, and she has a business selling the most adorable and amazing doorbells that you can put over your doorbell, an American flag or an eagle, all kinds of amazing things. You can order these at waterwood.net, just like it sounds, waterwood.net. And you can order these because Christmas is around the corner, and I would recommend these as a wonderful stocking stuffer. Let's all make the goal this holiday season to purchase products that support patriot-owned businesses, like my beautiful friend Kimberly. And again, it's waterwood.net, and you can use promotion coupon code LADYMAGA20. That's capital LADYMAGA20. And please support Kimberly's business by visiting waterwood.net. And we'll continue our discussion now about the transgender issue. I want to preface this by saying that I do not think that the majority of people who are on the left in the LGBTQIA+ movement are evil. I really don't. One of the lessons I'm going to talk about that I've learned is that we have a tendency to be too harsh, and we have a tendency to see everything as us versus them. And that is what the people in power want. They want us to be divided. They want us to feel hatred. They want us to live in anger and fear and not have the conversations with one another that are necessary in order to save lives and make a difference. So let me just start by telling you Kelly's story. So Kelly, I had met Kelly at a rally, and she confided in me that her daughter has come out as non-binary, and she wants her mother to call her they, them. This daughter is college age, and she has moved out of her home, and she has informed her mother, Kelly, that she is ruined, that she has PTSD, that her life is horrible because of her mother and the way that she was raised, and that she is dealing with trauma from the way that she was raised. Now, her daughter is in therapy, LGBTQIA sanctioned therapy, and she is being told that all of her issues are because of her mother. So basically, she is being brainwashed into hating her mother. So they recently had a family activity, and they were really hoping that their daughter, who now identifies as they, them, meaning not male, not female, just non-binary, which we'll dive into a little later. I want to explain these labels for parents. But she wouldn't participate in the family activity. She dropped F-bombs and really hurt her mother. And so in a tearful conversation with Kelly, we talked about how to reach this girl and how to talk to your child. So first of all, to any parent out there who is a conservative who listens to this podcast, I know one of the reasons you're listening right now is because you have gay or LGBT family members or friends and you love them. And I represent your love for them. That's why you follow me. That's why you relate to what I'm saying. And you wish that your LGBT family members could understand that you don't hate them. And you actually do believe in their freedom. But of course, you don't align with the radical leftist narrative that comes along with loving and accepting your LGBT family members. Because in today's world, you can't just be a conservative who loves your gay family member and believes in their freedom. You have to align with the complete leftist narrative, which of course is anti-American, which of course is racist, and it's all about division and hatred and socialism and masks and forced vaccines and everything else that's going on. So you can't just sort of pick and choose. It's all or nothing with the left. And the LGBTQIA plus movement is not just about loving your LGBT family members. It's not just about getting along and trying to find common ground. It is about setting it up so that it's us versus them, just like this girl's therapist has been telling Kelly's daughter. Now, Kelly's daughter has been cutting her arms with razors. She's been cutting her stomach. She was hospitalized for suicide. Kelly's devastated because she has no relationship that's meaningful with her daughter anymore. And her daughter lives in a so-called rainbow environment surrounded by only people who affirm her identity as non-binary, which again means not male, not female, they, them. It's like a neutral denial of biological realities. So the first thing I always say to these parents, and you guys, I really have spoken to so many people. Every single event that I go to, every rally, there is always a mother, usually, or a father who comes up to me and says, I really appreciate you being here because my gay friend or my gay daughter or my, you know, family member or friend has rejected me because they think that I hate them. And that's because they follow the mainstream media and the narrative that conservatives do hate LGBT people. So the first thing that I say to these parents is we have two priorities. And priority number one is to prevent suicide because the majority of these kids are in fact at risk for suicide. Actually, three priorities: prevent suicide, keep them close to you, and if they are a minor, prevent them from undergoing irreversible hormone treatments that later on in life, if they want to do that, they can. But because they're incapable of giving informed consent as a young person, we know a 12-year-old does not understand the long-term ramifications of taking hormone injections. And of course, the LGBTQIA plus movement never talks about the emotional and mental consequences of those hormone therapies. You can go and unapologetically and openly be yourself, warts and all. Just completely talk about anything and everything with other people. And as a parent, quite frankly, your child is going to have a safe space no matter what. And your job is to make sure that that safe space is you within your arms, within your home. And that means it's going to be difficult. That means you're going to have to control your tongue. That means you're going to have to swallow your pride. It means you're going to have to really, really open your mind and your heart and have the difficult conversations with your child, because if you don't, they are having that conversation already. They are already part of the LGBTQIA+ support group. They are already watching endless videos on TikTok and YouTube and Instagram and Facebook and Snapchat about non-binary, about intersectionality, about gender fluidity, about being queer. They're already getting all of that indoctrination. They're already having those intimate conversations. I guarantee it. So it can either be with them or it can be with you. It is that simple. So, you know, parents kind of feel like, okay, well, I can't embrace this. I can't call my daughter they, them. I can't have my son wearing a dress to school. And of course not. You're not going to be able to emotionally or even mentally accept this. But what you do have to accept is if you protest too much, if you yell, if you are too strict, they are going to run from you. They are going to hide from you. They are going to lie to you. And just like this girl, as soon as she was in college and out of the house, she has completely rejected her mother and hates her mother. So I'm going to talk about the next story. The other day, I got a call from a patriot, and he told me about a 14-year-old boy who is hiding girls' clothes under his bed. So they found all this girls' clothing, you know, skirts and dresses and high heels and everything under the bed. And the father is a staunch alpha Mormon LDS guy, and he was devastated and did not know how to handle this. So this is the crisis moment that so many parents are dealing with. It is truly an epidemic of LGBTQIA plus indoctrination and manipulation. More children are identifying as trans now than ever before. Of course, it is a billion-dollar industry to inject these hormones into kids. And of course, therapists are told that they cannot question the transgender narrative. And so parents have to make a choice. Is my child going to be indoctrinated by the left, or is my child going to stay close to me? So with this LDS Mormon right-wing alpha father and his 14-year-old boy, who is obviously cross-dressing and wearing girls' clothes behind the father's back, I'm sure that his natural instinct is to feel disgust, to feel anger, and to forbid his 14-year-old from wearing that clothing. So in this case, the first advice that I gave, and by the way, I'm not a trained psychologist. I only speak from personal experience and growing up as a boy who did love girl clothes. I was that kid sneaking my sister's prom dresses when nobody was home and twirling in front of the mirror. I am different, and I have been hospitalized for suicide attempts. So I do know what I'm talking about when it comes to these issues. Again, I'm not a professional psychiatrist or psychologist. I don't claim to be. I just apply my life experiences and try and help as best I can when these people reach out to me. So my first piece of advice to this father was take this 14-year-old child, hold him physically close to your chest, squeeze tight, and say, "I love you," about 5 times in a row, slowly. "I love you. I love you. I love you. I love you. I love you." And then look him in the eye and say, "I am here for you, and I want you to be able to talk to me about anything, no matter what it is. There will be no shame. There will be no judgment. I am someone you can talk to about anything." Now, the child is going to think, "No, I can't. You're going to judge me. You're going to make me go to church. You're going to cut me off. You're going to make me feel shame. You're going to be transphobic. You're going to be homophobic." So you got to know that that's what's going through the child's mind. And this is where it's difficult for y'all. You got to step back and remember, if this child doesn't open up to me and spill all their secrets to me, then they are going to turn to the LGBTQIA plus people out there who have open arms, who say, we are here for you. And in the case of Kelly, this really happened, by the way. In Kelly's case, when her daughter was still a minor, there actually was an organization in Utah. I forget the name of it. It's so-called LGBTQIA safe space. They claim to be there for LGBTQIA plus kids when their parents are not. And they actually tried. They had her daughter sneak out of their house. And they were going to move her into another place, accusing the mother of being abusive and being toxic. And they were literally trying to remove the teenage daughter from the home. And in many states and in Canada, they could legitimately do that. The parents could be called transphobic and dangerous because they are misgendering their child. Misgendering means calling someone by their biological gender instead of their preferred pronoun. And they can remove kids from their parents at this point. So that's just an example of how on the left, their goal is to separate and divide these families. So back to that 14-year-old in his dad's arms. I love you. I love you. And the dad needs to say something along the lines of, you know, it's time for you and me to have a talk where I just listen. I'm just going to listen, okay? And I'm going to do my best to not interrupt you. And I just want to listen. So tell me, son, why are you wearing girl clothes? Why do you like skirts? What kind of reaction have you been getting from people at school? Where did you get the idea to do this? Let's talk about it. You're not a bad kid. You are not evil. There is not, I love you no matter what, but I want to have this conversation. And so do you see where I'm going with this, everybody? If you have kids or young people in your family who identify as lesbian, gay, non-binary, genderqueer, all of this, you have to understand that your anger, your yelling, your resistance is going to push that child to go to another safe space. This does not mean that you think it's okay. This does not mean that you condone all of their actions. But it does mean that at a certain point, you can no longer control the decisions of your child, and you cannot control who they're talking to at school. You cannot control what they're seeing online. So you do have to relinquish a little bit of that, you know, authoritarian attitude that you can completely control them, because we all know that teenagers cannot always be controlled. They're perfectly capable of lying. They're perfectly capable of deceiving, and they will go out there and find that safe space. So as a parent, as a mother, as a father, you really do have to step back and say, I am your safe space. Now, what if a child tells you, by the way, I'm talking about this as a teenager who was gay, who had these conversations and who lived through this. I have 56 nieces and nephews, okay? Many of them are adults with their own kids. Well, great nieces and nephews now. I have a huge family. So I have watched 7 siblings and countless adult nieces and nephews deal with these issues in their families. So that's kind of the space I'm coming from. So when you're in the conversation with that young person, you have to be willing to hear things that are going to break your heart and that are going to make you incredibly uncomfortable. And you're not going to approve of the things that you hear. But just remember, if it's not me, it's them. They're going to find, if I'm not the safe space, then they are going to find that safe space elsewhere. And when I came out of the closet, my mom said that it was the worst thing that ever happened to her. She couldn't breathe, and it was very, very difficult. It was nothing compared to coming out as a conservative Trump-supporting drag artist, but that's another story. I was never fired from my 8-year career for coming out as gay as a Mormon, but I digress. So back to what my mom said was her number one lesson. She was devastated. She blamed herself. She said it was the worst thing that ever happened to her. And she just looked at me with bewildered eyes of pain and confusion. But she went to see her ecclesiastical leader, her bishop at church. And the bishop said to her, you know what? If you don't accept him and listen to him and hold him close, you're never going to see him again in an authentic way as your son. You will lose him because he's going to find refuge, and he's going to find another group of people who make him feel at home, and you want him to stay close to you. And so my mom, I know it was so hard for her, but she allowed me to talk about my experiences. She allowed me to share my views. She allowed me to talk about the guy that I was dating when I first came out of the closet. And now looking back, I realize that that must have been agony for her. But like the bishop told her, if she wasn't my space to talk about this stuff, if she wasn't there for me, I would have rejected her and ran away to other voices. And fortunately, I stayed close with my mom. And she helped me, God rest her soul, by the way. Friday is her anniversary of her death, and it's killing me. If your mom is still alive, please send them a text message right now and let them know that you love them. So my mom and I stayed close, and we came to an understanding that she's not always going to agree with my decisions, and she doesn't necessarily agree, but like Jesus or any loving figure, there has to be a place of non-judgment and guidance. So how can you guide your child even if you completely disagree with their decisions? Well, you can ask them, and I talked to Kelly about this. I said, you can ask them questions like, are you happy? How are you feeling? Why do you have the need to cut yourself? And you can let them know that your goal for them is not to prove that you are right and that they are wrong. You can say, my goal is for you to be happy, and we can explore that together. And obviously, in Kelly's case, her daughter is not happy. She ended up in the ICU for suicide, and she's cutting her body, and she's in total misery. And of course, we know why. Because she cannot accept herself as she is. She's being told that she's a victim. She's being told that her family is the enemy. And of course, she loves her family still, but she's being misled and she's feeling miserable. So a parent can sit down and say, my goal here is not to convince you of anything. My goal is for you to be happy, and you and I can talk about anything you want. And that means anything, guys. That means anything. Awkward sexual topics, awkward conversations about LGBTQIA labels, all of it. You have to be able to have those conversations because, again, they're having them elsewhere. It is critical to listen more than you talk in these conversations. Your blood's going to boil. You're going to feel depressed. You're going to feel angry. You're going to feel resentful that you're even having this conversation, but you have to listen. And you can ask questions. Like in Kelly's case, my advice was to ask questions and ask the following question. Now that you no longer live with us, now that you are wearing boys' clothes, now that you have identified as non-binary and your pronouns are they, them, are you happier? I want to know, are you happier? Are you happy? Because you were hospitalized for suicide and you're cutting yourself. And I know you blame me, and that's okay. I'm willing to have that conversation. But are you happier now? And of course, if the child feels safe, they're going to cry and say, no, I don't. I'm still totally unhappy. I still have anxiety all the time. And that's a door the parent can open and say, well, let's talk about your anxiety. Let's talk about anger management. Let's talk about these things together, you and I. And Kelly said that I'm stubborn. I don't have that ability to be vulnerable. I can't do it. I said, well, if you can't and you can't change and you can't make that happen, then you're not going to have access to your daughter's heart and soul and mind. And you have to be willing to swallow your pride and listen. So for parents who can't have that conversation, because in many cases, the kids will not even talk to the parent, here's another piece of solid advice that I would give to a parent who has a child who is gay or whatever. Write them a letter. And the reason I say this is because when I came out of the closet, I had, it was hard. Some siblings screamed and cried, and other people, you know, completely cut me off. Others cried and said, "We love you." But there was one thing that a brother-in-law did for me. His name is Rob, and he wrote me, I think it was like 8 to 10 pages. He wrote me a handwritten letter. And he explained a whole bunch of stuff. And I don't even really remember what was in the letter. But the number one thing that I remember in that letter was he said, "You are always welcome in our home. And we love you no matter what. You are family and we love you." And you know what? I was welcome in their home. They were kind and loving to me. And that meant the world to me. And I'm still close to them to this day. And so I admonish parents to write a letter. And the letter, if your child is identifying as non-binary or he or she pronouns, you can just use their name and say you. And here's what you put in that letter. You say, "Listen, I love you. You are my baby." And then you share a memory of how wonderful something was in their childhood or when they were a baby or when you were maybe breastfeeding. Talk about that bond and that love that you feel and let them know that that will never, ever go away or diminish no matter what. And then, I'm getting a little emotional talking about this, guys. I know this is hard. I mean, for crying out loud, I've dealt with this so much. But this is what I would have loved to have heard. Words like this: no matter what choices you make in life, no matter what identity you choose, no matter what you wear, no matter who you date, no matter what you do, you are my baby. And at the end of the day, you can come to me with anything. And if things don't go right and you are depressed and you are feeling anxiety or you are suffering, I am there for you. You can come to my house, crawl in bed. I won't ask any questions. We'll put on your favorite movie. I'll make you a nice meal, and you can just collapse when you are feeling depressed or anxious right here. And we don't even have to talk about it at that time. And of course, if they do come to you, you can open up that conversation. But like I said, suicide prevention is number one in these cases, because youth suicide among allegedly transgender kids is skyrocketing. And the greatest tragedy is suicide among these kids. And of course, on the left, they blame the religious right. They blame Trump supporters. They blame patriarchal society. They blame all of that for these suicides. And I'll share my belief as to why these suicides are so high. It is not because families are rejecting them. I would say they find acceptance and they find tolerance and love within these LGBTQIA plus groups or therapists or school counselors. The reality is they are not alone as they come out as transgender, especially if they're in the government school system. But the real reason that these young people are committing suicide and hurting themselves and cutting is because they have been unable to fundamentally love and accept themselves as they are. We all are born with a biological body, whether you're male or you're female. And if you're 12 years old and you fundamentally believe that you are in the wrong body, you know, many parents of so-called transgender children say, "My child was in the bath and they looked down and then they looked up and they asked, why do I have this or that? And they were so upset. And I explained that that was the moment I knew they were trans." So teaching a young, vulnerable person that, yep, you are in the wrong body. Your testicles or your breasts are, that's a mistake. you are not meant to have this body. So we have to fundamentally change you. And we're going to do that with hormone blockers. So we're going to inject you with hormones that prevent your body from developing because nature's course and your natural biology are actually harmful and bad. Step back, whether you're on the left or the right, and examine the psychological impact of believing that you are fundamentally in the wrong body. Now, I'm not talking about adults here. If an adult really believes that and wants to go through surgeries or hormones, power to them. God bless you. You know, Caitlyn Jenner or other people, my trans friends, I accept and fully support your freedom to do as you choose as an adult. But when you're a vulnerable 10-year-old or 13-year-old and you wake up in the morning and you go to bed and you take a shower and you look in the mirror and you fundamentally believe that you're in the wrong body, of course you're going to feel sad. Of course you're going to feel anxiety. And this is why those feelings lead to suicidal tendencies in these young people. And I'm not talking from a place of transphobia. I'm not talking from a place of hatred. I'm talking from an honest place, examining the reasons why these young transgender people are killing themselves and why they are so depressed and why Kelly's daughter is secretly cutting herself, even though she should be on cloud nine by now. She's out. She's non-binary. Her pronouns are they, them. She lives with LGBT people. She's going to LGBTQIA++ therapy, and yet she's still cutting herself because she's in so much deep pain. And my belief is because she is fundamentally rejecting her very, very biology, and that is emotionally traumatizing. The other reason these young people are killing themselves is because, and no one wants to talk about this, puberty blockers and hormone injections in a vulnerable young person's body are emotionally and physically traumatizing. And I recently was contacted by a mother of an allegedly transgender child, and the child is underage and is on hormone therapy and is on puberty blockers. And she claims that everything is hunky-dory, but I guarantee if that mother was honest with me, her child is experiencing emotional trauma. Her child is experiencing anger and rage and emotional outbursts because these are the proven side effects of injecting a human body with hormones that are not biologically meant to be there. High testosterone levels in a young, vulnerable girl who is 13 or 14 years old is going to have massive emotional and physical consequences. And so if you are a child and you're 12 or 13 and you're already going through so much, God knows middle school is tough. You know, I was in sixth grade and I had eggs smashed on my head. I was called a fag and all this stuff all the time. It really was torturous at times. And so if people had told me the solution to your problem is hormone injections because you were in the wrong body, it would have made it worse, not better. And the emotional outbursts that come from someone who is taking hormones, whether it's male being injected with estrogen or female being injected with testosterone, the emotional consequences are agony to deal with. And I know this because I have many adult transgender friends, and I have seen the emotional consequences of the hormone therapy. I won't say his name, but I was very close with a transgender man in Boston when I lived there. Wonderful guy, and I do call him a guy. I won't be legislated or told it's a hate crime if I call her she, but I actually didn't know that she was a she until later on. I mean, he had a beard, but I watched this person get in huge fights with people, and it wasn't conservatives. It was just his peers within the LGBT community. He was depressed. He was experiencing anxiety. He was experiencing emotional outbursts and rage. I'm talking rage. And we know why. It is because she was a biological woman, and now she is injecting her body with testosterone, and it throws things out of whack. And on the left, no one wants to talk about these consequences. No one wants to talk about the long-term emotional impact of these hormone therapies. I recently did an interview on this podcast. I hope you listen to it. It's with a man named Buck Angel. He calls himself Tranpa. He's a 59-year-old transgender man, lives his life as a man, got big muscles, very macho. And he is someone who said that when you have this conversation about drugs and hormone therapy and puberty blockers, the primary issue is people are not honest about how difficult it truly is to go through these procedures. And he said, this is only something you can legitimately handle as an adult. And he also pointed out the fact that if you want to become transgender, you have to stay on these drugs for the rest of your life, forever. He explained to me that in order to maintain his facial hair and his muscles and his lifestyle as a man, he has to stay on those hormones for the rest of his life. And he said there are side effects to these drugs. And the LGBTQIA movement is presenting these drugs as a cure-all for mental health issues, as a cure-all for every aspect of being different. They say that these hormones are miracle drugs. Puberty blockers are miracle drugs. Your child will be so happy. Everything will be great. They don't talk about the emotional consequences, and they don't talk about the dangerous cancer-causing side effects of these drugs, many of which have not been on the market that long. And if you read the fine print about these dramatic hormonal injections, you will see that there are very serious consequences. And of course, there's always the consequence of infertility. And before I did this podcast, I was watching video testimonials by people who are called detransitioners. And I want to share a story of a video I watched. It was a young girl who explained very honestly, you know, in 2013, I was on social media and I really, really got drawn into the idea of being, you know, the opposite gender, of being a boy, because I was never good at being a girl. And in my head, when she said, I was never good at being a girl, ding, 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 ding. This is where the essential conversation comes in. Define being good at being a girl. What? Are you supposed to only wear makeup, have long, pretty curled hair, wear dresses, do ballet? Or can you be a girl and play sports? I have a niece who was on the football team. Can you be a girl who has short hair? Can you be a girl who thinks that makeup is stupid? Of course you can. And this is where the manipulation really comes in. If you believe that there are more than two genders, okay, and if you believe that gender is a social construct and it does not exist, then why do you insist that a girl like she was, who doesn't like makeup, who's not so-called good at being a girl, why would you say she's in the wrong body and she is in fact the opposite gender? Doesn't that reinforce the idea of a binary? Doesn't that say that there are in fact two genders? And if you behave this way and you like this and this, and you're a girl who doesn't like makeup and you're a boy who doesn't like Spider-Man and Batman and you want to play with Barbie, that means you are in the wrong body and you are in fact the opposite gender. To me, that seems even more strict and more dramatic than a Christian conservative who gets angry if a boy plays with a doll. That Christian conservative parent might be angry at their child the way my dad was when he would catch me playing with a Barbie, but he's not. He never told me, you are in the wrong body. I promise you, it was much less damaging to be given a little shame about playing with dolls than it would have been to be told, oh, you are in the wrong body. And now we're going to completely transition you to the opposite gender. That is more traumatizing. So let's get back to the idea of detransitioners, such as this young lady who shared a video. Detransitioners are people who go through hormone therapy, who go through chemical treatments, who go through surgical procedures, and they wake up one day and they realize, oh my gosh, I don't want this anymore. I don't want to be a man. I don't want to be a woman anymore. I want to just go back to the way I was born, back to my biological body. And this girl's primary reason was because she wanted her own biological children. So when a parent is giving their child puberty blockers that have irreversible lifelong consequences, or a parent is encouraging a 16-year-old to get genital alterations, are they talking about the fact that they can never have children in the future? Not all of these treatments render someone completely infertile, but if you go all the way in transitioning from a man to a woman with all of the procedures available, or the opposite, if transitioning from a woman to a man, you will be infertile in the vast majority of the cases. So do they talk about infertility? Do they talk about depression? Do they talk about anxiety? Do they talk about anger management issues? No, they don't talk about this. It's just a one-size-fits-all slap. Here we go. You are transgender. Let's get you on these drugs. So the detransitioners are a very, very controversial movement of people who are explaining that they regret their decision and they wish to transition back. So let me share a little bit about what it's like for those people. So believe it or not, there are medical professionals out there who are researching the detransition movement. It's a real and growing phenomenon. So detransitioners have formed their own groups online. And they are shot down, they are silenced, and they are not allowed to share their stories because people within the mainstream LGBTQIA plus movement, they don't want their voices out there because it negates what they're presenting as a one-size-fits-all perfect solution. So in one study, which was done by the Society for Evidence-Based Gender Medicine, they found that the people who decided to transition, it was most often because they realized that their gender dysphoria, meaning you don't identify with your biological gender, was related to other issues, not gender dysphoria. Issues such as perhaps a chemical mental illness, a regular good old-fashioned depression, perhaps abuse or molestation or something traumatizing that happened when they were a child, health concerns. So 70% was because of other issues, like we talked about, mental health or abuse in the childhood, other things that they had not dealt with, and they thought that the transitioning was going to fix it all. And the second one, the second number one reason they detransition is because of health concerns. Of course, the side effects of these medications. Of course, the potential to become infertile, all of these things. And they 50% said that their transition did not alleviate their mental health and emotional struggles, which is clearly the case with Kelly's daughter, who is cutting herself and she's depressed and obviously identifying as non-binary and rejecting her family and rejecting her biology has not made her happier. And so 4 in 10 of the people who detransitioned, according to this study, also endorsed a change in political views as a reason for transition. And 43% of them said that. So they probably woke up and realized that they'd been lied to and manipulated by the left and the Democrat Party and organizations like the Human Rights Campaign. And they realized it's not all sunshine, rainbows, and flowers. And they were deeply struggling. So they also changed their political views and they detransitioned. I mentioned that Kelly's daughter was approached when she was still a minor by an organization that was legitimately helping her to try and emancipate herself from her parents, and they even arranged and orchestrated her sneaking out of her house to go and live in their center by claiming she was being abused. So the LGBTQIA plus mainstream movement, and I'm not saying they're all predatory, but I am saying there is a predatory element in this of recruitment and trying to cut off children from their family members. So here's what's really tragic about people who decide to detransition for many of the reasons we've discussed. The participants in the study who were in the process of detransitioning, which I can't even imagine what that's like, Let's say you're 12 and you go on puberty blockers and you don't go through your natural adolescence as a boy, and then you're 17 and your genitalia has not fully formed, you don't have an Adam's apple, you're not as tall as you could have potentially been, and then you want to detransition, it would be totally traumatizing. So who's there for them when they want to detransition? Most participants reported significant difficulties finding the help that they needed during their detransition process from medical, mental health, or LGBT communities. Only 13% of the respondents received help from LGBT organizations when detransitioning, compared to 51% when transitioning. A number of participants reported negative reactions from LGBT and medical communities, and 51% of the sample expressed that they did not feel supported during their detransition. How terrifying to be someone who was coerced into taking hormones and transitioning and identifying yourself as the opposite gender and going forward with it, and then you realize, oh my gosh, this isn't for me. I want to have children. I don't feel any happier now like I thought I would. I just want to detransition and stop this. Imagine how horrifying it must be for those people to realize that the very people who said, we love you, we support your identity, we support your decision, we are tolerant, we are loving, we are your community, we are your safe space, we are here for you, and we love you. But if you change your mind, they're not even going to help you. They're not going to help you fund your detransition, which clearly in many cases would involve medical intervention. They're not even going to acknowledge your identity now. Who is tolerant? Who is loving at that point? They're using people to push their agenda. And once they don't fit their narrative anymore, like the detransitioning movement, which is widespread and very real, they will no longer support the very people that they promised to help until the very end. My interview with Buck Angel, and I really do hope that you will listen to this interview. My interview with him was fascinating because he brought up something that I hadn't really studied, and it's called affirmative therapy. What is affirmative therapy? Affirmative therapy means you have to affirm and agree with what your client presents to you as a mental health professional. So if a 9-year-old boy comes in and the parents say, oh, he's been wearing dresses and he's always playing with mom's makeup and he wants to watch Disney princess movies all the time and he believes he's a girl because at school he saw another child who identifies as a girl. And they changed her name and she's not Amanda anymore. I mean, he's not Brandon anymore. He is, you know, Melissa, whatever. So you take the child into therapy and the therapist is now legally required. And we're talking medical journals and social pressure as well as legislation that is forcing mental health professionals to be affirmative in a child's decision to become the opposite gender. This makes no sense. This is abusive. This is horrible because the first question a therapist should ask a little boy who is wearing dresses and wants to be a girl, the first question the therapist should ask is, what makes you happy? You like dresses? Why do you like dresses? You like dolls? Oh, wow. What's your favorite kind of doll? How come you like Barbies? Your mom says you really love watching Disney princess movies. How come you like those movies? And you explore the child's heart and you get to know why they identify so strongly with the opposite gender. Now, I'm thinking of myself as a 9-year-old. And if I had been brought to a therapist and the therapist asked me those questions, I would say, well, I like dresses because I like the way they feel when you twirl. And I like Barbie because I love brushing her hair. And I love pretending that she's, you know, a doctor or whatever, you know, you do with Barbie. And I love girl stuff because it's pink and it makes me feel happy. And when I play with My Little Pony, I feel happy. And then the therapist would say, well, what about boy toys? What about, you know, Batman or Spider-Man or guns or whatever boys play with? And I'll say, I would have said, well, when I go into the boy section at Target, nothing is smiling at me. Batman doesn't seem like he's happy. And I don't like fighting and I don't like punching. And so the WWF toys look really angry and Spider-Man's not smiling. And I don't want to pretend that I'm shooting people. And I don't want to pretend, I don't like to fight. I just like to be happy. And in the girl aisle, all the toys are smiling at me and things are called friendship and magic and sparkle. So that's why I feel happy there. And so the therapist could have said, well, it sounds like you have a very tender little heart there. And it sounds like you love friendship and you love sparkles and you love, you know, things that are smiling. And that's perfectly normal. And lots of girls like those things too. But did you know that there are girls who don't like to play with dolls and they just want to play sports and they love to play army and they don't want to wear dresses and they don't even like the way a dress feels when they twirl. And those are girls who are different and you're different. And that's okay. You know, you're okay. Do you see where I'm going with this? Everyone who's listening right now, you explain to the child that you are a boy who likes things that are different. Why would a therapist even question that the child is in the wrong body? No, the child is just different. The child is just special. Quite frankly, I was completely special. I was a very different 9-year-old. My dad, before he died one time, actually the day before he died, we had a long conversation and he said, you know, Ryan, you've always been so different. We would be driving to the farm and you would be looking out the window and you would notice things that I would never notice. Butterflies or flowers or birds or I don't know. I was looking out the window as a little gay kid, you know? And so why would a therapist tell a child that, yes, you need to be a girl, and then tell the parents that we need to get this child on puberty blockers because going through puberty is going to be traumatizing? No, can't you just tell that kid that you're different and you're special and that's okay and there's nothing wrong with you? And don't you ever let anybody tell you that you're in the wrong body or that you're a girl, because you are a boy and it's okay for a boy to be different. Within the modern LGBTQIA++ narrative, the idea of being a good old-fashioned homosexual or lesbian is being essentially erased. Just being gay is no longer enough because the powers that be, such as the Human Rights Campaign, Pride Centers, Equality Utah, GLAAD, they realize that nobody really cares about people being gay or lesbian anymore. They're over it. So they had to create a new victim narrative. And everything now is about trans, 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 trans. That's all it is. There is no longer a gay movement. There's actually a movement called the LGB movement, called lesbian, gay, and bisexual movement, who reject the idea that a person with body gender dysphoria is actually related to homosexuality or lesbianism, which of course is not always the case. So the movement has pushed us to a place where everything is about transgenderism. And quite frankly, if you have a kid who loves Barbie or who loves to dress up, the likelihood of your child being gay is there. I mean, most gay men identify with what our society considers for girls. Okay? If you're a teenager and you love only female pop stars like Taylor Swift or Ariana Grande or Britney Spears or whatever, there's a chance your kid is probably gay. I mean, stereotypes exist for a reason. Of course, this is not every gay child, but what they're doing in the modern LGBTQIA+ movement is telling young kids who are probably just gay like I was that they are in the wrong body and that they need to transition. And it's manipulative. And they're not even exploring the option that, well, maybe you're gay. Maybe your kid is going to grow up to be gay. And in therapy, I don't even think the idea of being gay or being trans has to be presented to anybody who has not yet begun adolescence. You could just talk about tolerance and acceptance and love of your child as they are. So if you've enjoyed this episode and you are a parent, I want you to listen to the following story. My mom, before she died, she had a huge toy room filled with all kinds of Disney and everything for all of the grandchildren. And one day, I wasn't there, but she was babysitting my little nephew. And he came down the stairs and he was wearing those little slip-on Cinderella dress-up shoes. And he was carrying a big Rapunzel doll, like one of those life-size dolls. And he stopped at the bottom of the stairs and he looked at my mom and he said, Gigi, are these just for girls? And she said, sweetheart, this is grandma's house. You play with whatever you want. Do you like those shoes? Do you like the way they make the noise on the floor? Do you like that beautiful Rapunzel doll? Well, you just play with that and you do whatever you want. And I've had conversations with the father of this kid, because he asked me about this and said, you know what? Grandma said that he was playing with that. I said, you know what? So what? Let him play with it. Don't make a big deal out of it. If he's gay or whatever later on in life, you can deal with it. And why don't you just present the opposite type of toys or things that are traditionally for boys to play with? You know, non-offensively, non-aggressively, let him play with the doll and then say, hey, you want to go play catch? You want to play basketball? You want to dig a fort in the backyard? You know, you want to shoot guns? Whatever. Just let kids be kids. Let them grow up and let them make decisions about their bodies and their identities once they're old enough to do so. And especially medical decisions must be made later on when they're 18, ideally 21. And we know, especially with men, we're not even fully developed until we're about 24. I'm super tall. I'm 6'2". Well, not super tall, but I'm 6'2". And I didn't get really tall until I was about 24. So let kids be kids and have those open dialogues about things that don't matter. Quite frankly, for that dad who found that his child was cross-dressing, wearing a dress is not the end of the world. It might be embarrassing for that parent. It might be a super hard thing to do, but letting your kid wear a dress is essentially harmless because there is a chance he'll outgrow it. It might just be good old-fashioned rebellion. It might be peer pressure. But allowing the child to undergo hormonal treatments crosses the line, and that is never okay. I want to wrap things up by talking about conversion therapy and alleged internalized homophobia. Many people within my circle of friends and family have cut me off because I speak out against the radical elements of the LGBTQIA movement, and they say that I am an internalized homophobe. And the only reason I do what I do is because I hate myself because I'm gay. Here's my response to that. Number one, I'm basically America's most outspoken drag artist, okay? I dress up. If I was ashamed or hated myself, I don't think that I would parade around the country dressed up in drag. I love drag. I love dressing up, and it is what it is. I also don't think I would be telling the world that I'm gay and just being myself, being my good old flamboyant self, if I actually hated myself. So I'm going to dismiss anyone who says that the only reason you're doing this is because you hate yourself. That is a lie. If I hated myself, I wouldn't be who I am, and I definitely would not be standing up for myself against people who hate me. And conversion therapy is also something I wanted to touch on. So I did go to some conversion therapy when I was still at Brigham Young University. I didn't like it. It wasn't for me. I felt that it was dishonest to tell a girl that I love her and I don't want to do any touchy-feely, but she deserves a guy who will date her who wants to do touchy-feely with the girl stuff. So it just felt inauthentic and it felt dishonest, and I didn't think conversion therapy was great. Now, I'm not a big fan of conversion therapy, trying to take someone, especially after they've gone through adolescence, trying to make them straight. I don't think it works. I think it's counterintuitive, and I don't agree with it always. That being said, the number one thing that the LGBTQIA plus community loves to talk about is the trauma of conversion therapy, when in fact, they are the ones doing conversion therapy in today's world. Conversion therapy is actually not that common on the right. Most people accept their kid as gay, especially if they're in their late teens or young adults. But on the left, guess what they're doing? Again, I said everything is trans, trans, trans. They are telling biological women who are lesbians and biological men who are homosexual that if they are not attracted to a trans person, they are in fact bigoted and transphobic. Now, when they say not attracted, what they're talking about, I'm specifically speaking for Arielle Scarsella. She's a lesbian, outspoken conservative, used to be on the left, but she abandoned it because she's tired of being villainized for being a biological lesbian. So what is the mainstream LGBTQIA plus movement saying? They're saying that if she, as a lesbian, is not attracted to a transgender woman who still has male biological anatomy, she is transphobic. If that isn't conversion therapy, I don't know what is. That is telling her that she is bad for not being attracted sexually to something that she should be attracted to. What's the difference between telling a gay man that you should be attracted to women and a lesbian lady telling her you should be attracted to a trans woman with male genitalia? It's nonsense. It's absolute farcical nonsense. But that is being pushed by the LGBTQIA plus movement. But conversion therapy is bad. Do you see the glaring hypocrisy in what's going on? So in conclusion, you guys, I would just say try to not view things as us versus them. Do what I said. If you're dealing with an LGBT friend or family member, write them a neutral letter, a letter that professes your love, your support, and just the idea that you will be there if and when anything ever falls apart. You are there to listen. You are there to love. And remember, if it's not you, it is going to be somewhere else that they find their so-called safe space. So please do your best to be that safe space for your LGBT family members. And if you enjoy this podcast, as always, please visit LadyMagaUSA.com. You can go to donate, and you can donate $1, $5, or $20 a month to help me make my activism financially sustainable. I am not there yet, but as many of you know, I was fired from my career in the airline industry for posting pictures with guns and being a right-wing extremist, according to them. And I'm trying to make my activism financially sustainable. So if you could donate a little something every month, that will help me to plan events, attend events, edit videos, post on social media, do this podcast, and of course, stand up at the legislature for legislation that is common sense and makes sense. So God bless each and every one of you who made it all the way to the end of this podcast. Please share this podcast. And you could also share this with people who are struggling, like Kelly. We all know someone who is losing their child right now because of the LGBTQIA plus manipulation. And I hope that this podcast was soft enough and gentle enough to not come across as hateful, because I don't hate these people. I just want them to be happy and to awaken from what they're going through. So go forth, everybody. Be happy. Never give up. God bless you, and God bless America.